is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. Thank you for joining us this evening on The Urologist Speaks. My name is Dr. Graham Cates. I'm filling in for Dr. Gregory Pinto. So it is wonderful to have you all joining us this evening. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to be a part of this important conversation. As I said, my name is Dr. Graham Cates. I'm the Medical Director for Family Medicine Center and a family physician at Family Medicine Center. And we are so pleased to be here tonight to speak with you about some very important topics. Our guest tonight in-house is my colleague and friend, Dr. Sunita Belgrave King. It is wonderful to have you here and welcome.
Hi, thank you so much.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background?
Okay, thank you so much. So I am Dr. Belgrave King, as you mentioned. I'm a family medicine physician and geriatric specialist. I would say that I would have finished my specialty about 15 years ago. And particularly through the pandemic, when we saw a lot of elderly persons dying, their vulnerability kind of had me ask the question, why? And that helped me to realize that I wanted to do more than just family medicine. I specialize in geriatrics. And going through the whole specialty, I started to find that I was leaning towards persons with memory loss. You know, my first patient said, where do we go from here? They had this diagnosis. They didn't know the cause. They didn't know what to do. And that's where the idea first stemmed, 3 years ago. What if we create a program that was just perfect for them? A program that helped patients, a program that helped family members to feel like they're not alone on their journey and they can answer that question, where do we go from here?
So what is geriatric medicine?
So geriatric medicine is the care of older persons. There is always this big debate on what age is older.
Yeah, am I old, doc?
one definition says older than 65 years old. The other definition says older than 60 years old. But interestingly enough, sometimes we see patients in our clinic as young as 50 years old.
Interesting. Very interesting. So when we look at geriatrics and geriatric care in the Bahamas and the landscape of what we actually have in the Bahamas, we are an aging population, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and globally, we're seeing more and more people living longer. And so therefore, we're seeing more people which are older.
That's right.
Yeah, and so with that comes changes. And so when we look at normal memory and development of memory, what are some of the sort of key things that we should be doing? And how do we sort of look at helping to keep ourselves healthy?
That's a great question. One of the things that I love to promote, and the ladies that work with me will tell you, every morning I come to work, I have my bowl of berries. And the reason for that is, berries are one of the strongest antioxidants to help memory. And it's a part of a diet called the MIND diet. Very fitting name, MIND diet. And that looks at 10 foods that helps to increase our brain health and five foods that we want to decrease. So particularly you want to be using more vegetables, more green vegetables. You want to be using more fish, nuts, oils, and then you want to be decreasing your fats, your sugars, all those things that, you know, look good, but aren't necessarily.
I mean, then they sound generally healthy for you as it is.
Yes. Yeah. Outside of that, other things that we can focus on is exercise. Being nice and fit, the recommendations are just about 150 minutes a week. Not too bad, you know, twice a week, 75 minutes, not hard at all. Getting adequate rest. Sleep is where the memories are consolidated, where, you know, your brain just kind of rejuvenates and refreshes itself and is absolutely important in looking at your brain health. And then there are other things like protecting your hearing, not listening to loud music, ensuring that if you have any visual impairments, you correct those, and just focusing on things that affects your overall health. We typically will say if you have good heart health, you have good brain health. So that means if you have hypertension, diabetes, high cholesterol, you want to treat those things as well.
So do these deficiencies that occur maybe from a dietary point of view or chronic medical conditions such as diabetes and hypertension generally affect memory? And how do they affect the memory?
Absolutely. So as I said, when you look at the heart, if the heart is not healthy, it affects the brain. And so studies have been showing that persons who have high sugars, you know, through their diabetes, high cholesterol, through their hyperlipidemia, persons whose diet is not healthy, they're not exercising, they're not sleeping well, these patients are at increased risk of having dementia. And this is not one condition. It's a group of conditions that affects how the brain functions, how we remember, how we think, how we act. And so it's really important that as we assess any patient and manage any patient with dementia, that we're also decreasing these risk factors.
So you said something that's very interesting, which is that memory has an impact on really every area of our lives. It's
Absolutely.
Not just our ability to recall a certain event, whether it be a bank account or some memory that we have of our childhood, but it actually affects our function of daily living.
Yes. And it's actually one of the things that we look at when we're assessing patients. So you have your basic activities of daily living, and I will say you're more advanced. So some of your basic activities we may take for granted. A patient with dementia may not remember how to dress themselves, take a shower, how to use a toilet. They may actually be wetting themselves or soiling themselves, requiring Pampers. And something as simple as getting in and out of the bed can become difficult. You know, another aspect of the advanced activities of daily living where they're no longer able to do their finances. So going to the bank becomes an issue. They're not able to go shopping, or they may go in the supermarket and keep rebuying things that they've already bought, or they buy what they need and then they don't remember how to get home. Things such as cooking, doing laundry or housekeeping become difficult tasks, even using the telephone. So imagine that same patient had a fall. They don't remember how to use a telephone. They can't call for help. So it may seem like just memory, but now it's more intricate. It affects all aspects of their lives and the lives of their family around them, because it does take a village when you're caring for anyone.
So a few things that you mentioned earlier about preserving memory, good nutritional practices, regular exercise, cardiovascular health, of course, plays a big role, and not just in memory, overall health and well-being. But are there things that we can do as individuals to help to improve our memory?
Absolutely. So outside of those things that we mentioned, one of the biggest things out there is just brain exercises.
Okay.
And some of those brain exercises would include puzzles. You know, persons like crossword puzzles, they like Sudoku, playing games, rather things like TikTok. snakes and ladders. Let me bring it home now. Some dominoes, you know, like you're playing games. There are different exercises that you can also do with your fingers that helps with the recoil. And recently I saw a child playing with the cube.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And yeah,
I've seen one of those in a while.
Listen. Wow. And you know that is. And he was going at top speed. So his brain function was exceptional. But games and also social interaction. You know, we should never downplay how important it is to have a conversation with some person and review a nice photo album. We have social media now. Like, what is a photo album?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And speaking about social medias, I guess two aspects to that. One is a lot of these activities are available in apps.
Absolutely.
So we can download them. We can use them on a consistent basis. But even beyond that is the social connection that we can create. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the fabrics that we're seeing changing over time is our social interactions. What are your thoughts on that as it relates to just the interactions that people are having? It seems like a lot of people in today's world are very technologically driven. And there's nothing wrong with technology, but I think there are some parameters that we all need to define of what that actually looks like for us. And are we seeing the impact of technology on memory?
So that's a really good question. So as times change, and so now we're moving a lot from social interaction to social media, you also see how patients present be a bit different. Mm. And so one of the things that we are seeing more of is pseudo-dementia, where it looks a lot like dementia, but when you start to evaluate that patient, you realize that it could be depression, or loneliness. And so it's really important that every patient, no matter why they came in that office, that you look for those reversible causes as well, because they look at exactly like a dementia patient. And so we're seeing that change of landscape now, and we expect to see other changes because today is social media, tomorrow it could be something else.
Yeah, and the advances in AI technology that are happening now, and the shift in employment with the advances in AI technology. So people are definitely needing to be mindful of all of these things.
Absolutely.
In one, protecting their memory. Two is making sure that they're looking after their general health and well-being. And thirdly is making sure that we are developing our memory. And even at this age, and I'm still young, I'm not claiming to be old, but we have activities that we need to be doing to make sure that we're engaged and we are actually actively stimulating our brains and stimulating the thoughts. One of the other pieces that I find very interesting to this conversation is the role and responsibility of the family.
Oh, yes.
You know, I think this is such a critical part for Bahamians, not just Bahamians, but globally, is that the family dynamics and those social interactions that we have, taking the time and sitting down and having a meal together where you can have conversations, taking the time and sitting down and playing a game together rather than just plopping down in front of the television or everybody sitting in the same room and on their phones and texting each other back and forth, you know? So let's be committed as it relates to our own personal well-being and our family's well-being to make the time for those social interactions are so important. So you've been talking about, we've been talking about memory, you've been talking about the memory clinic. And so what is a memory clinic? Why did you come up with the idea of creating a memory clinic in the Bahamas? And, you know, I'm proud to be a part of this moment. At Family Medicine Center, Dr. Belgrave King has established one of the first memory clinics in the Bahamas. So congratulations to you, an extremely well done job.
Thank you so much.
And so what is a memory clinic and why is it important?
Yes. So a memory clinic, as the name implies, is a comprehensive clinic that focuses solely on memory. From the time the patient has a symptom, even before they start having symptoms, throughout their entire journey. The reason it's important to have it is because you get earlier diagnoses, because we are using more advanced technology, whether it be introduction of AI, whether it be biomarker testing, which is a special advanced blood test that helps us to identify patients before symptoms even start. It also helps for early intervention, not just from medications point of view, but all the non-pharmacological aspects of the care is incorporated, such as the MIND diet, such as exercise, sleep hygiene practices for persons experiencing insomnia, stress mechanisms. Outside of that, it also involves a more holistic treatment. I always say that the treatment of dementia is like a spider web. It's not just one pill. Every aspect of the patient has to be managed, from their hypertension, their diabetes, their high cholesterol, to their sleep apnea, to vitamin deficiencies, to thyroid issues. Every aspect of the patient's health needs to be managed. And it also allows us, by having a memory clinic, to comply with international guidelines. So if you go to Cleveland Clinic or if you go to the UK, you can be rest assured that what we offer you here is on par with what they're doing. That is why we need a memory clinic.
Amazing. And so a few things that you mentioned that sort of piqued my interest. One is that the memory clinic is established here in Nassau. So
yes.
One, it is accessible to people that live in the Bahamas,
yes,
and in the region if they want to be able to access it. And so that's important. Who should we be seeing? I am a relative of a father who is 95 years old and a mother who is 87. And I'm privileged to have my parents here and thankful for that. What should we as individuals, healthcare providers, or even non-healthcare providers be looking for, and sort of some of the cues that may say, hey, you know what? This is an opportunity for me to tap into this important resource that is now available in the Bahamas.
So I'll answer that from the aspect of the patient,
okay,
and then the aspect of the family. So from the aspect of the patient or any person experiencing memory loss, that is some person who needs to come. Whether they're no longer able to handle their finances like they used to because of some type of memory impairment. They may be misplacing their keys more than usual or constantly forgetting where they park their car or missing appointments, over-medicating or saying, well, I took those medications already, but you really didn't do it. If you're seeing changes to the person's concentration, their complex attention starts to be affected or their focus, a lot of people would describe it as a memory fog. Mm. That is a good patient to come in. Even those persons who may have language problems as it relates to memory. So they had a stroke, you know, you're not able to understand them like before, or you're talking to them and they're not able to understand you. That is a good person to come in. Another big one is getting lost. They're getting lost while they're driving or even in their own home. They just can't find the bathroom, or they keep saying to you, I want to go home, when they're home already.
Right.
That is a patient that should be evaluated. A patient that is wandering, you know, that is a patient that we want to evaluate, because we want to help you create a personalized plan that protects the patient. Now, from a relative point of view, we also offer screening for any person who has a family member with dementia. Within our practice, we have genetic testing that is offered for these patients. It's called APOE, and that helps us to know, hey, are you at an increased risk, more than just knowing that my relative have it? You know, do you have the genetic predisposition to potentially get this condition? And so we start to work with you from there, adjusting your risk factors so that you yourself can decrease your risk. Studies have shown that 40% of patients with dementia had reversible risk factors.
Wow, amazing.
That's a lot.
That's huge.
Yeah, so every 10 persons that have dementia, 4 of them potentially had a reversible risk factor. And so if we find that in a relative, we can get started before any type of symptoms show.
So what are some of the early cues that you would say as a individual, myself, that you would want to be looking out for before you get to those late cues, wandering or getting lost? Are there some early cues that we should all be aware of and say, hey, I'm not remembering the way I used to remember, and maybe I should really be assessed early? Because one of the things that you mentioned a little while ago was the importance of early detection.
Yes.
And the earlier you find it, the more better the treatment prognosis is, I would assume.
Absolutely. Now, as it relates to early signs, sometimes it could be easily missed. Mm. Something that's very subtle, like a person overly dependent on a to-do list when before they were not. So most of the times is based on that individual. You know, I was always on target with my appointments. Now they're slipping my memory. I always remembered birthdays and anniversaries, but I just missed Johnny's anniversary.
Interesting.
Yeah, I just
important
missed
dates.
Yes, important yes. dates. Things like asking the person what date it is today, and they keep giving you a date that is so far off. You know, it might be a day or two off, but you're asking them what is today and they're saying it's March. You know, subtle things like that that you might not recognize, or the person just becoming a little more confused, particularly in the evening we call sundowning. You know, I always say to families, if you think it's suspicious, or you think something is a little off, it probably is. The safest thing to do is just to get an evaluation.
And be proactive.
Yes.
Yes. So I think this brings us to another very important part of the conversation, which is really related to looking at how do we as individuals be able to access the service. Is it just a matter of calling up? Is there some special way that we need to do to be able to get into your memory clinic?
So we have multiple ways that you can reach us. One of the easiest ways will be by telephone. You can call us at 702-9310. Or you can come to us through our website on Family Medicine Center's website, and you can apply for an appointment and we can get back to you. Or you can email any of us. Our email addresses are on the website as well. If you want to reach me directly, I will be sbelgrave@fmcbahamas.org.
And the other address is info@fmc.org. So these are ways in which you can get in touch with Family Medicine Center, Dr. Belgrave King, a specialist in memory. So one of the other aspects is, you know, we hear a lot in the community about dementia. We hear about Alzheimer's disease.
Yes.
Is there a difference between the two, or are they the same?
That is a great question, and actually the most commonly asked question. So how I like to describe it is, if I ask you what type of car you're driving, the car doesn't tell you anything. So that's dementia, is a group of conditions. Whereas if I say to you, I'm driving a Suzuki, it gives you more information. That's the type of dementia, where Alzheimer's is the most common type. So dementia is that umbrella term that tells you, hey, there is a problem with the brain. Mm-hmm. It's affecting how we remember, how we think, how we reason, how we act. Whereas when I say the patient has Alzheimer's, that's a specific type of dementia, and actually the most common type. About 70 to 80% of your cases will be an Alzheimer's dementia case.
Very interesting. And then are we seeing globally an increase in the number of persons that are being affected with dementia or Alzheimer's?
Absolutely. So globally, statistics are showing about 70 million cases of...
70
yes.
million, Doc.
Yes, 70
Folks,
million.
We need to listen. This is a huge number of people. And I bet, you know, there are some persons that are listening right now that actually are experiencing or maybe aware of family members or persons in their own community that are being impacted by dementia, Alzheimer's, and those numbers are staggering.
They are. And so globally, we are seeing as patients age, aging population. It doesn't matter what part of the world you go, we have an aging population. And so sometimes in the past, people, what they thought was normal aging was not. It was actually some signs. And so as we have an aging population, the number of cases are also increasing. Also, because we are getting better at diagnosing, we're able to identify more cases.
Right. So someone calls up and says that we want an appointment for myself or their family member. What are the next steps that are taken in terms of doing an assessment on the patient? They come into the clinic. How do you go about making a diagnosis and assessing those individuals?
That's a great question. So a person comes into our memory clinic. The first thing that we do is get a history. We want to talk with them. We want to talk with the family members, trying to understand, firstly, what brought them in. Was it simply just memory loss?
Right.
Was it that they're no longer able to handle their activities of daily living? So we take a comprehensive history. We also look at their medical conditions. What exactly are they being managed for? We look at their medications, because there's some medications that can affect your memory. And if that's the case, we want to stop those. Whether it's medications or supplements, we want to stop those first, or maybe switch into something that's a bit safer for them. In the assessment, we want to get to know more about your family. Is it a case that there are other family members with Alzheimer's? Is it a case there are other family members with things like Parkinson's dementia?
Right.
We also want to look at their social history. You know, before this diagnosis, what did they do? What was their level of education? Because persons who are more educated also need different types of assessments. So
okay.
Our assessments are based on their level of education. Then we go into an examination. In the examination, we start off with your basic vitals, looking at your heart rate, your blood pressure, your temperature. We even look at your height and weight, because we're making certain calculations to make sure that their nutrition is adequate based on some of the parameters like their BMI. We also do a vision assessment called visual acuity, and then we do a screening hearing test. So we do the whisper test, and if they fail that, we then will get audiology involved. In addition to that, we do some memory screens. Some of the most common ones are your clock drawing tests. We have something called the mini mental state examination, a 30-question analysis that looks at how the brain functions based on various parts of the questioning. For patients who are more educated or who are just quick, you know, we do another testing for them. And then we also rule out your other causes like depression and delirium in that visit. As you can imagine, you don't do a diagnosis in one visit,
of course, very rarely. But even that part of just getting the history, doing the basic assessment sounds very comprehensive, very
involved.
How much time would something that typically take?
So it depends on how quickly the patient responds, how well they remember. And so our first assessments can run you anywhere between an hour to 2 hours. And then from there, we'll order some testing based on what we're finding. So if we're thinking, this might potentially be reversible, we have a basic panel that we'll look at, which would include things like your vitamin levels, your thyroids. We're checking for any anemia, any kidney disorders, any liver function disorders. If, for example, we're thinking that this is not reversible, but could potentially benefit from more advanced care, we have your biomarkers that we go to test for. So these are checking for certain proteins that can develop on the brain. And then we have our imaging. Imaging could be as straightforward as a CAT scan. It could be more advanced, like an MRI scan. It could be even more advanced, like a PET scan. And when that patient and relative were able to sit down, discuss everything that we found to help them know, hey, this is the diagnosis that we're working with, and then we start a personalized treatment plan.
So with that first part of the assessment, it sounds as not only does the patient need to be there, but we need to have family involvement. And so how do you incorporate the family into that part of the initial assessment? Are there different parts of having the interviews and questions? And how is that best facilitated with your memory clinic?
So for everyone coming to a memory clinic, I always encourage them to bring a family member. We have the ability to hold 2 to 3 family members at a time. And the reason for that is I always start my interviews by showing them a clipboard. One side I have a paper, the other side I don't. And I say to the relative, do you see the paper? And they'll say yes. And I say to the patient, do you see the paper? And they'll say no. And I say to them, you both are looking at the same clipboard, but from 2 different sides. And this is why I need the patient there to get their side and also the relative to get their side. Because by putting both sides together, we're able to get the best picture possible. Because remember, you are seeing the patients at home. We aren't. And so we need that information from home to help us with a diagnosis.
Amazing. Sounds like a great plan. It sounds like something that is obviously very efficient in getting the information that you want to get. And so at this time, we're going to take a little bit of a break. I want to welcome you to this very important conversation, the Memory Clinic at Family Medicine Center, which is being led by Dr. Belgrave King. It is wonderful having you here as our guest this evening, and we look forward to having you back after the break.
Thank you.
Mommy, guess what I did in school today?
Hold on, sweetie. Mommy's sending a text.
But Mommy, my teacher said that you're not supposed to text and drive.
I know what I'm doing.
Oh, look, Mommy, the Smith twins. Mommy, watch out!
In 2017, approximately 54 people died as a result of traffic accidents. A percentage of these fatalities occurred as a result of texting while driving. Just taking your eyes off the road for 5 seconds can increase your chance of crashing. Remember, even the smallest voice counts.
Brought to you by UB Radio and Guardian Radio 96.9.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Change doesn't happen in sound bites. It happens when people come together and actually talk. The forum is that conversation where behemoths from all walks of life work through the issues that affect us all, challenge each other, and find solutions together. Every Saturday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. The Forum with Ricardo Wells, coming this Saturday to Guardian Radio.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Hello, good evening, Bahamas. Welcome back. It's wonderful to have you here tonight in-house. This is Dr. Cates, family physician. I'm filling in for Dr. Gregory Pinto on Urologist Speaks. Tonight we have a special guest in the studio, Dr. Sunita, changing your name on you and all, Dr. Sunita Belgrave King. And so it's a privilege to have you here. Welcome. And we are talking about memory. And we're talking about a very important topic, which is about the memory clinic that has been launched at Family Medicine Center. We want to make you aware of it. So one of the things that I wanted to start up this next segment on was the apprehension that patients and family members may have associated with bringing a relative in for an assessment or even being able to navigate a conversation with a relative regarding their memory. How do you address that? What are some of the tools that are available that we can provide to individuals to give them some tools to help with addressing this?
So this is a very common thing that patients and their relatives encounter. Sometimes it's not that the patient doesn't want to come, but they have no insight, meaning that in their own world, in their own mind, there's nothing wrong with me. And it's one of the questions that we screen for to find out how we as physicians are going to navigate telling them this diagnosis or starting some type of management is to find out, does that patient recognize that there's something wrong with their memory? Then there are the patients who have insight. They absolutely know there's a problem, but they're not yet ready to deal with it. And you know, in medicine, we call it the stage of change. Are they ready to accept that something is wrong? Because sometimes if you give it a name, it means that you have it.
Right.
And it's very common for Caribbean people to say, I'm not claiming it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't want to come for assessment because if I claim it, then this thing is going to be real. It's really going to happen. And so the relatives, on the other hand, they feel helpless. They feel like, what do we do in a situation like this? I want to help my mom. I want to help my dad, but he doesn't want to be helped. And so in order for us to navigate this, we typically will do a mental capacity testing. Just because some person has memory loss doesn't mean that their mental capacity has been fully gone.
Right.
And so if their mental capacity is intact, meaning their ability to make decisions is still intact, then we do have to leave it out to the patient. So mm-hmm. that's the painful reality. But if there's perchance their mental capacity is not intact, this is where now we as the family and the physicians, we have to step in. We do our assessments and we help the family apply for application of guardianship.
Okay.
So this is the legal aspect of dementia where while the person has mental capacity, we look at what we call their power of attorney. If they don't have one, we assist them by doing reports to go to their lawyers to get one. And then if they don't have mental capacity, we start with the application of guardianship. So it's not necessarily an easy case to maneuver, but it's one of the most common things that we encounter every day.
Yeah, so I mean, I totally appreciate what you're saying. I can see how for families it can be very difficult to have these conversations with their relatives, parents, or maybe even other relatives that they have. But they're such important conversations to have because they can be transformative because there is help. There is hope that is available through various things that can be done to help people with memory deficiencies. So once we've identified that this individual has gone through, you've put them through the testing, they've had the blood test done, they've had the diagnoses. So what's next? What's the next stage of the plan?
Once they've had a diagnosis, we want to provide the family one with resources. So we typically will compile all the information we discuss with the patient, including their blood test results, their imaging results, and kind of create a medical file for the patient that we give to the family. Because it's very important that families feel empowered. They know what the diagnosis is. They know what to do. So that's one of the first things that we do. We also use the opportunities to explain to them what is happening, if they have any questions, because you may explain and they still don't understand.
Sure.
And so it's very important that not just us know the diagnosis, but the family understands the diagnosis. We answer all questions and then we start a personalized treatment. One arm is the non-pharmacological, so we're looking at your lifestyle changes. The other arm is your pharmacological, where we're choosing medications that are best for the patients at hand.
Okay.
And then the other arm is the caregivers. Are the caregivers overwhelmed? Are they burnt out? Because we're not trying to create two patients. And so as a result, all three aspects of that arm needs to be fulfilled. Once we've done that, we bring the patients back. And at that time is where we're looking at what we call advanced care planning. In our advanced care planning state, we're asking them, do you need a home visit? Because we need to find out if there are fall risks, so we need to put different changes in place for that family. Another aspect of our advanced care planning is the legal aspect, putting things like your power of attorneys in place, the application of guardianship if necessary, if they need a living will, all those things are discussed. Another aspect of the advanced care planning is just kind of putting a plan in place for the future, because the reality is that dementia is a journey.
Right.
It doesn't stop at one visit.
Sure.
And so now we're setting up their follow-up appointments. We're telling them, hey, this is the stage of dementia that your loved one is at. This is what you can expect at the next stage that's coming. And we're always trying to be proactive as opposed to reactive. So if we know that you're at stage four, we want to let you know what happens in stage five, what happens at stage six, and we're bringing back the family and the patients before that happens so that we can adjust medications, adjust treatment plans, and just help them to be prepared for every stage of it.
So if we dive a little bit deeper into these various components of the overall treatment plan, the first thing that you mentioned was about lifestyle.
Yes.
So what are some of the general lifestyle advice that you're providing for patients and family?
So when it comes to lifestyle changes, we typically implement the MIND diet.
Okay.
So this is a diet that combines the Mediterranean diet and the DASH diet, which is a diet that helps to stop hypertension. That's what it stands for, DASH. Now, with the DASH diet, there are particular servings that are recommended each day and each week. But the gist of it is increasing those healthy brain foods, whether they be your leafy green vegetables, your nuts, your greens, your legumes. If you're using oil, they want you to focus on things like olive oil. They want you to use your berries. Strawberries and blueberries have been studied the most.
Okay.
And they want you to decrease those foods that cause cognitive decline. Those are foods that are richly fried, foods that are sugary, foods that are rich in salt. So things like your red meats, all those things we want to decrease. And it's not as simple as just to tell a patient, hey, this is the MIND diet. But on our team, we have a dietitian who assists the patients in creating personalized plans. You know, if you prefer grits versus something else, they will help you. How can you make that grits and tuna under the MIND diet recommendations?
Right. So not one size fits all.
No, definitely not one size fits all. It's based on you, what your family can afford, what your family likes to eat, et cetera. And also your comorbidities. If you have hypertension, diabetes, it's curated based on that. Another part of the diet is exercise or movement. And I say our movement because depending on the stage of dementia, you may not be able to exercise as the term expects, but you may still be able to do a lot of low impact movements that can still benefit the brain in some great way. Another aspect of it is sleep management. A lot of patients having dementia have an underlying condition called sleep apnea, which affects the oxygen and carbon dioxide levels while a patient is sleeping. And we typically will just say, boy, that buddy's snoring loud, eh? right? But it's more than just snoring. You know, if you're snoring, particularly if you are overweight, you should get assessed for sleep apnea. Outside of that, we also implement routines or schedules that can help the family manage the patient, but also help the patient to decrease confusion. There's other activities that we implement. So there's your games, there's your word search, there's music therapy, there's art therapy, all these things we introduce our patients to. And when it becomes overwhelming, we also allow you to consider daycare for patients with dementia to help. Outside of the non-pharmacological, then there's a pharmacological aspect. This aspect depends on the type of dementia this patient has. Alzheimer's dementia is treated very differently to a Parkinson's dementia,
okay,
to a frontotemporal dementia, or a dementia with Lewy body, or even more common that we see in our population, a vascular dementia. And this is a dementia that's related to your cardiovascular risk factors, like your stroke, your heart attacks. That is a very common type. Mm-hmm. And so depending on which type of dementia the person has, our medication is adjusted to suit. Now, just before dementia, there's a stage that we don't hear a lot about called mild cognitive impairment. Mm-hmm. And in this stage of progression, rather, because it's not really a dementia, this stage of progression, there's some disease-modifying treatments now available for the first time. And this will be IV treatments. One of the most common is Leqembi. And so this medication actually alters how the brain functions, and it has some level of reversal. So when the patient comes in, their management just depends on what stage they're at, what is their diagnosis, and what are their needs. Because you may be mild, but your needs are different. And I'll give you a quick example. You know, a few weeks ago, I had a patient, clearly a mild cognitive impairment. And what he said to me was that, I don't have any family members around. Okay. I don't have any children. I don't have, you know, any siblings. And so the management of that patient moves way beyond medication, but now to help create a social village for them so that in the event they progress and they're no longer able to make decisions for themselves, there's some person that they feel comfortable who will intervene on their behalf. So the management is personalized based on the needs of the patient.
And the therapies that you've mentioned in terms of the drugs, are these available in country?
Absolutely. So all of our medications are currently available in the country. And so once you meet the criteria for them, we get started. We have an algorithm that we follow basically to ensure patient safety, to make sure that, yes, there can be potential side effects, but that these side effects are minimized.
Right. So a very multidisciplinary approach, a very comprehensive approach in terms of the management clinic, memory clinic. And the other aspect of it is, what about follow-up? So what does the follow-up look for the patient and for the family?
So the follow-up varies each time, but some of the things that are done at the follow-ups are sometimes you're rechecking some of those memory screens that we need to see, hey, was there any, were we successfully able to halt the condition, or were we able to cause a slower decline? Because currently we know that once the process starts, we're not to stop it 100 and reverse it,
right,
but we want to slow it down. And the example I give to patients are this. Think about Bimini with 10 lampposts on it. We have a hurricane and the hurricane knock out 5 of them. We want to secure the 5 that remains. So we may not be able to come in and resurrect new lampposts, but we want to make sure that whatever remains, we're able to preserve them, because we're going to expect more storms and we're going to expect more hurricanes. And that's the same thing for dementia in the brain. You know, the process is happening. We call it a degenerative condition, which means with time, brain function declines. And so what we're trying to do is whatever is left, we want to preserve that functioning.
And that's done through all of the various aspects that you mentioned, the lifestyle management, the treatments, the drug therapies that are available, and of course the continued follow-up of the patient and family.
Yes,
and so that holistic approach of looking after everybody, because it really does take a village, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, and so all of those, all of us that are involved in family and family health care, these are important things that we want to be aware of. Of course, the prevention side of things, the early detection side of things, and then also making sure that we're leaning into what we can do as individuals. You know, as we look at overall memory and memory function and memory decline over time, what are some of the things that you've been able to see since you've launched the memory clinic, or maybe even in your training, that are new trends and patterns that are developing in prevention and also in treatment?
So this is a really, really interesting point. So some of the trends that we are seeing is that the percentages that we were told is not necessarily true for our population. We see a very high proportion of Alzheimer's dementia type picture here.
Okay.
And we see a very high proportion of vascular dementia, that one related to your cardiovascular risk factors, like your stroke and your heart attacks. Outside of that, we're now seeing quite an increase in the Parkinson's dementia type patients. And so we're working closely with our neurologists because we're seeing quite an increase in that. Outside of that, other trends that we're seeing is that people are presenting somewhat earlier, even though there's a fear of wanting to be checked. You know, persons are hearing the information, the awareness is building.
Yes.
And so people are coming earlier asking questions. So we're also seeing an increase in being able to detect patients with mild cognitive impairment. So I'm extremely happy for that, because the earlier we're able to detect, the earlier we're able to intervene, and the earlier we're able to treat. So we're definitely seeing greater numbers of mild cognitive impairments. And outside of that, we're also seeing an increase in reversible causes. And that's why it's very important to do a comprehensive analysis. Some of those reversible conditions would include your vitamin deficiencies, particularly your vitamin B12 deficiency, your folate deficiencies, your thyroid disease. You're seeing it more particularly in your hypothyroidism, even though there are few cases reported of a hyper or overactive thyroid. You're also seeing it with outside of that, we do screen, well, anemia. We're definitely seeing the anemia. We're treating those. But there's also a relationship with some of our sexually transmitted infections. And so for patients, that screening is also paramount because let's say, for example, the patient has syphilis. If we are able to treat that successfully, then those pseudo symptoms are also reversed. So it's really important to look for your trends as well when we're assessing these patients.
Yeah. Patient for myself and everybody that's listening. And I think for me as a primary care physician, which is my passion, it really is about looking at one, making sure that you're getting your yearly medicals done and being willing to be open to new information as it's presented to you, because the world is evolving and things are changing on a regular basis. And so we need to stay current with what those health recommendations are, making sure that we are seeing our physicians regularly and not burying our head in the sand as often we do and say we're not claiming that, because it does catch up to you and there are long-term consequences associated with poor health. You know, one of the things that I do often in my clinical practice is I like to give analogies to patients, and one of the analogies that I like to use is people preparing for their retirement, right? And so if you're not investing into your pension fund or your retirement fund, when you go to retire, there will be nothing there for you to retire with.
True.
And we dream of sitting on the porch and watching the sunset and relaxing, and it's just not going to happen. So we have to make that investment into our health as individuals to make sure that we are maximizing the return, the long-term return of our health. And if we see that things aren't going well, whether it be in our physical well-being, our mental well-being, our memory that we're talking about tonight, the memory clinic at Family Medicine Center, we want you to be proactive in accessing those services and calling in and getting your appointment so that we can have you assessed. And once we have the information, we are then able to make recommendations in terms of best treatment options.
Yes.
What have been some of the most exciting things that you've seen since you've started the memory clinic in terms of assessing patients or maybe even in treating patients?
Wow, I think, and I hope she's listening, I think one of my most exciting patients was one with pseudo-dementia. For years, she had a misdiagnosis of dementia. And when we would have done her full workup, we actually found a reversible cause.
What a blessing.
And so it was indeed a blessing. I feel like a part of the family because I've met her family from all across the world, even those who are here. And now she's doing really good. Her management is very comprehensive, including those lifestyle changes we spoke about. There is pharmacological management or medications, but, you know, she doesn't have that diagnosis, and now she's able to work on measures to keep her brain health as active as possible. Because the reality is, even though she doesn't have it today, it doesn't mean that she can't develop it in the future.
Sure.
And so for her, more than anybody else, follow-up is still very important because we want to make sure that we keep her brain health as good as possible. Another patient that I think would be very interesting in our assessments would be one of our patients on the advanced treatments, and that is one that helps to modify the disease. With that particular case, they have an early form of Alzheimer's dementia, and so they've opted to do the IV treatments where we are monitoring how their memory is over time, and just seeing the progression has just been beautiful for that patient.
Wonderful.
So I think that those two would be standout cases in my mind, and I can never forget the first patient that said, 3 years ago, where do we go from there? Wow. I think that stood out so much that some of our literature and our resources now in the memory clinic actually has that slogan, where do we go from here? So I say that because the program is not a copy and paste. The program is personalized, and with each patient, we change, we get better, we welcome feedback because we cannot create a program for you without having you. And so I think that what we have here is beautiful. I think it's comprehensive, it's evidence-based, and patients feel the passion, they feel that, you know, we absolutely care for them because it's not another clinic.
Yes.
You know, it's a clinic here that focuses on the patient, it focuses on the family, and it also focuses on constant aim just to create what is best. It's about time that, you know, patients could feel like they don't have to leave this rock to get excellent care. And I hope that that is what patients feel as well when they walk through our doors.
And folks, you know, we have the best of the best here tonight, and we have the best right here in the Bahamas for you to be able to access, and what a privilege it is. One of the questions that I did want to ask you as we get ready to sort of conclude the evening is, one of the things that you mentioned was about doing genetic testing for people that may be having a family history of dementia. How do you go about doing that, and why is that important?
So in terms of our genetic testing, we offer that for all of our family members of a person that we diagnose with dementia. So it's kind of like that proactive arm of our program. And we do that genetic testing via blood tests. The results come back very quickly, and so persons don't have to worry. They have to wait months for results.
Anxiety.
No, we're not adding anxiety. Our results come back very quickly, and based on the results, we do genetic counseling with those family members so they can know, hey, what's your risk are and what you can do to help lower your risk. As mentioned, 40% of patients have modifiable or reversible risk factors for dementia. So we want to tap into that knowledge and deal with that 40%.
Yeah, which is so important in the preventative aspect. And, you know, knowledge is power. And we want to make sure that we're providing you with accurate, reliable information so that you as an individual and collectively as a family can have a positive outcome on your health and your well-being. And at the Memory Clinic at Family Medicine Center, that is what we are doing. We are driving the engine of making sure that you have access to quality healthcare services, which are going to impact the general health and well-being of our entire Bahamas. So some final thoughts as we conclude this evening here on You're the Urologist Speak. I'm Dr. Graham Cates, filling in for Dr. Gregory Pinto. This evening, I have the honor of being here with my colleague, family physician and geriatrician, Dr. Sunita Belgrave King. Some final thoughts that you want to leave us with this evening?
So my final thoughts would be this. You are not alone. Today, I wear the butterfly as it builds dementia awareness. It pretty much signifies transformation.
And the butterfly is beautiful, folks. I wish you could see it.
It signifies transformation. It signifies hope and vulnerability, because this is what a typical patient with dementia has. They're going to transform before your eyes. It's not going to remain at the same stage, but there's hope, because these individuals may have lost their memory, but they've not lost their dignity, because they're very resilient persons. And so we must be mindful that during this vulnerable state, that you have a full team that's here to help you.
So please visit Dr. Belgrave King on Family Medicine Center website. That's www.familymedicinecenter.org. You can give them a call at 702-9310 to schedule your appointment, or info.org at FMC. We appreciate having you join us this evening. Thank you to Dr. Pinto for allowing us to be able to host this evening. We appreciate you. Thank you very much. Everyone listening, have a wonderful evening, and God's blessings.
God's blessings.
Take full control of your bladder. let it control you. Come check with